You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Chop Podcast, a podcast devoted solely to covering the Atlanta Braves Baseball Club. I am not Brad Rowland, your regular host. You may recognize me, Eric Cole, over from the Road to Atlanta podcast, or I've made appearances on this very podcast, or just on various other forms of media. Brad is out of town. I believe he's in Vegas doing basketball stuff, covering Summer League. And so he asked me to take over the main hosting duties, but I couldn't have done this show without my good buddy and guy I don't get to talk to a whole lot, at least in early, is one Scott Coleman. How you been, buddy?
I'm good, man. It was we're recording this, for those who don't know, we're recording this about 10 minutes after Sunday's game wrapped up, so you can imagine it was a little stressful as we were sitting here ready to record. But yeah, that was it's kind of a reflection of the first half, though, right? I mean, it wasn't necessarily the prettiest thing in the world, and it made our hearts rate, and like you said, you need a drink. But at the end of the day, the Braves won, and now they get to go into a much needed break for the next 4 or 5 days and kind of recover a little bit.
Yeah, it was just hysterical kind of how it went. The Braves were in control for literally the first 7 innings. Then basically a fastball that doesn't get in quite enough results in a 3-run homer to make it a 1-run game. And then a confluence of events in the 9th inning results in the bases loaded being bases loaded twice against Luke Jackson. And a miracle Charlie Culberson throw home saves the 4-3 win for the Braves. It was kind of wild.
That's got to be the best, I obviously haven't given too much thought to this, but that has to be the best 9th inning defensive play for the Braves since Hayward made that catch with Craig Kimbrell closing, like in 2013, 2014, whatever it was, where Kimbrell turned around. And
that's a really good one.
Pointed to the heavens, basically. Yeah, I mean, that was to make that catch after sitting on the bench for 7 innings. I think he came in the top of the 8th, so he'd been out there at least 1 inning, but I mean, to make that catch cold off the bench, and then the throw was perfect. If it's anything less than perfect, Alfaro gets in. So it was pretty incredible.
So there's a couple candidates here. I know Andrew had a couple crazy catches in 9th innings, but I mean, that's not, outside the realm of possibility considering how good he was defensively. But that Dansby throw in the Arizona game last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was there at that game.
Yeah, it was a big spot. Makes the diving play, makes the throw home, and ends the game on the spot. I mean, that's another really good one, but this was it was a great throw. I don't even know how Culberson, the way he ended up being like across his body, got 90 miles an hour straight to home on that throw, but he did.
Yeah.
So, the way this is going to go, we're just going to do a little bit, some news type items, some things that just happened during the game, as well as some things that have happened in the past week. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the All-Star break and kind of what's going on, a little bigger picture stuff, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the trade deadline. But before we get to all that, first bit of news item that we had this week was Anthony Swarzak went to the injured list, man. I was pretty bummed because especially with his history of shoulder issues, it's not something that you like want to hear, but it doesn't sound like it's too serious. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about it?
Yeah, considering he's been a godsend since the trade, it's never good to lose a guy like that. Hopefully, as you said, he does have a bit of a history with some shoulder problems. But I think Brian Snicker said a couple days ago they expect him back. I think the Saturday after the break is when he's eligible to come off the injured list. So hopefully it was just a good 10 days to get him right. I think it was some inflammation of sorts, and hopefully he was able to get some work and some treatment done on it, and he'll be ready to go because they will certainly need him in the second half.
Yeah, he's been great, and it was funny when that trade happened because I think if the Braves have – around the time that this happened, if the Braves had announced that they were just releasing Jesse Biddle and Viz, that there wouldn't have been nearly as much of an outcry. But people were like, why are we taking back Swarzak? He hasn't been any good this year. So every time I get asked about it, at least early on, I was just like, it's just like releasing those guys but with upside. Like there's a chance that you get a viable reliever out of the deal, and he's been great. He's been one of their most steady relievers for sure. You know, reasonable people can kind of debate as to who's been the best just because, the situations they've been put in. But Swarzak's been really good. And hopefully, again, this seems like a minor thing and no one seems to think it's going to be something that lingers. So it's both good and bad news that we haven't had Swarzak available, but at the same time, you know, it doesn't sound like it's going to be something that's going to take too long. And considering that they haven't really had to tax the bullpen too much lately, they've had some, you know, some deeper starts, and they haven't really had to use a bunch of guys with days off and things like that. Overall, it's worked out really well. Dansby Swanson missed a couple games with a sore quad, but he was back in the lineup today. Did not look particularly great, but it's worth noting that the game where he was quote-unquote hurt, he hit two home runs, so I don't think it was an issue of his quad bothering him that he wasn't particularly good today, but instead more just didn't have a great game. Is that something you're concerned? Because I know quad injuries can be one of those ones that can be a little bit tricky, and you kind of even give them time. So if you are going to get one of those sore quads, it seems like a good time to have it.
Yeah, and, you know, I know there was some frustration and disappointment that Dansby didn't make the All-Star game, and with a couple other guys on the roster too. But, I mean, me personally, as cool as it is to see him out there on Tuesday night, I'm perfectly fine with these guys getting 4 days off to rest, especially when they're going to open up on the road on the West Coast in San Diego. So yeah, it can be a tricky thing, but hopefully getting those 2 days off, he was out there today, and then he'll get the aforementioned next 4 or 5 days off with the break. Hopefully he gets back to 100% because he has obviously had such a big first half and a breakout year, and anytime he does get injured, you hold your breath just a little bit because he's had the injury history since coming up. But no, I think the fact that he was out there today was encouraging, and again, you just give him some rest and some treatment and get him ready for the second half.
Yeah, and it's worth, I mean, the injury issues with him that would be far more concerning is if, like, his wrist was bothering him, right?
Absolutely.
Like,
that,
if it was a wrist thing, because then you never know, like, does he have the same issues? Was there an overriding problem that he's now propping back up again? But with a quad, I mean, those types of muscular and injuries and things like that, they range from they don't really bother people at all long term, or they can be a season long thing. So hopefully this is the case where it sounded like he wanted to be back out there right away. But the Braves were being cautious, and I'm glad that they were, that they have the roster depth right now, that they can sit a guy like Dansby and be like, look, we can just put Camargo out there, or we can move the roster around a little bit, and it's not going to really be a big drop off. So overall, really good sign in that regard that he was out there today. The big news for today, and one that I've honestly have some minor league writers that are being borderline insufferable right now, is Mekhi Backstrom signed today. He was the 18th round pick, or definitely the 18th round pick, a guy that a lot of us like. I will say that Matt, Gaurav, and Garrett probably like him more than I do. I think they probably would have drafted this guy in the second round if they had the opportunity. Big time tools. And Mekhi's been honestly been great. You know, he's been having a lot of fun with the whole process. It's a difficult decision for him because he was kind of a first round talent coming into the kind of the draft season, but didn't have the greatest season. Sounds like he was having a vision issue, which has been corrected. And now it's kind of one of those, you draft him and give him a decent size bonus, maybe not that first or second round bonus, and you might have a real player on your hands. Any thoughts on Mekhi? I know you've been kind of cursorily aware of kind of what's going on.
Yeah, you know, I trust you, and I trust all of our minor league guys who are great. And if, you know, for everyone listening, if you aren't listening to Road to Atlanta, make sure you check that out too, because it's
the shameless plug.
You like that? Yeah, there you go. But you know, everybody who follows along and knows things more than I do, that they all are enamored with his upside. And again, you're talking about an 18th round pick here. It's not like you're, you know, if in 5 years he doesn't pin out, it's not like you just missed on a top five pick of the draft here. So again, it kind of goes in hand with what we talked about after the Braves wrapped up their draft, that they early on, they took a couple guys who they might be able to underslot so they could overpay on some prep talent later in the draft. And that's what they've done. I know a couple people have said this kind of really puts the cherry on top of what looks to be a pretty strong draft class. And again, with all things, we won't have any idea what this class looks like for 3, 4, 5 years, but it was a nice to get him done before the deadline here that's upcoming, and add yet another promising young talent into the system.
Yeah. And I'm probably going to be asked who else hasn't signed. I feel fairly confident, especially since it's Backstrom, that he's not going to be signing for $150,000, $175,000 or anything like that. The majority of the, if not all of the bonus pool that was left is now gone. So the guys who are left, and there's not a ton of guys that we had any realistic expectations of signing from the groups of guys. And the Braves have signed well over, I'm pretty sure it's well over 75% of the class. of their entire class, which is good news because they have a lot. They have a lot of guys, a lot of lottery ticket types, a lot of guys who are really young, and there's no telling what ends up happening down the road. But they drafted a bunch of athleticism on days two and three. On day one, went a bit safe, but again, Braden Shoemake's performing really well for Rome. Shea Langlier's a lot of good reports, even though the results haven't been there. Bo Phillips sounds like he's starting to hit too. So it's a fun draft class. It's a very interesting one because it's so different from the Brian Bridges high upside prep talent. You know, grab those prep arms without fear because, you know, they were so good at identifying the ones that were going to be good. So we're kind of getting used to that. And I will say that a few of the minor league guys, they're still not particularly happy about how things went early on in the draft. But watching some of these guys now that I've had a chance to see them in pro ball, there's a lot to like about some of these guys too. This particularly Shoemake, who we thought was going to be an underslot guy. But now he's like hitting 400 over his first 15 games in pro ball, and he's really hitting the ball hard. So it's kind of hard to be upset about signing him at slot if he's just going to continue to produce. So overall, really fun. It was a fun day. Again, Backstrom's been really funny. Apparently, we have to get him a fruit basket now.
I saw that. Yeah. Yeah. He seems like a great kid.
Oh yeah, really, really fun, guy, and it seems like he's kind of enjoying the process. And it was a hard decision for him because he could have gone to college and in a couple of years been, you know, assuming the talent, you know, kind of plays out the way it could have. He could have been a first day guy and he would have made more money, but he made the decision to, you know, take the money and take his chances in the pros, and we're excited to have him in the organization. Ender Inciarte is still rehabbing, and you know, the 0-for-4 with grounded into a double play and two strikeouts every game is pretty close to what we've been seeing.
Yeah.
Kevin Gausman's also rehabbing. He was down in the GCL and no, I'm sorry. He was in Florida. I might be just wrong about it. Yeah, he's in Florida. So we'll kind of get to Gausman in a second because we'll talk a bit about the rotation going forward in the second half because that's going to be kind of an important topic, I think. But what do you think is going to happen with Ender? Is he even going to play with the Braves again? I feel like they're just going to extend his rehab stint out as long as humanly possible.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the big question out there right now. What do they do with Ender, who, with his flaws, I mean, no one's going to come out and say they have to move heaven and earth in order to get this guy a roster spot, but he has plenty of value. Everyone knows what he brings defensively. You know, there's a reason he's been a successful big leaguer for five or six seasons now. What do they do with him? I don't know. I mean, if there's an injury, I think that's the obvious one. It'll be interesting if somebody does have to go on the DL, how quickly they kind of ramp up Ender's rehab. Because they suddenly
need someone.
That'd
be hilarious. All of a sudden he's in Gwinnett the next day or something.
Right, yeah, amazingly ready to go. But at the same time, you also have Adam Duvall, who hit another home run today. I mean, there's options here. And the way, as you said, the early results, now he hasn't really swung a bat in about a month and a half. So there's going to be some rust. It's going to take some time for him to get right. But as you said, as far as rehabbing him goes, I'm not sure you can just keep him down in the minor leagues forever until the rosters expand in September. So I guess it's not the worst thing in the world knowing you have a Gold Glover getting up to speed in the minor leagues. But as of today, unless they're going to trim the bullpen down to seven guys, which they don't seem likely to do, just given that some of the starters are having trouble going deep into games, you know, you're certainly not getting rid of Charlie Culberson or Matt Joyce. I guess you could consider sending Johan Camargo down to the minors to get him right, but then you're losing probably your most versatile infielder, and obviously they're rolling with the two catchers. So unless they're going to trim the bullpen down, which just doesn't seem very likely to me at this point, I'm really not sure what they're going to do. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I have thought for a while that they were going to move him before the deadline, and the rationale is just that he is a very valuable player. Defensively, he's very good. His kind of second half hitting prowess is kind of a meme at this point, but it's there. You know, for whatever reason, in the second half, he tends to hit better. And a guy that's been around for a long time seems to be a really good clubhouse guy too. I just think that this particular Braves team right now is better when he isn't in the starting lineup. It's worth mentioning that defensively, the drop-off has been real. I mean, Austin's been improving, and so is Acuna in center, but you can't really replace what Ender is defensively in center field. And there's upside to having him, you know, playing for the Braves, but losing one of those bats and replacing it with Ender's, we saw at the beginning of the season what that looked like, where at the bottom of the order, it just looked like nothing ever happened because it was slow rollers to second, and here comes the pitcher.
Yeah.
And you know, that just killed innings for us. And what we've seen from this team for what, 2 months now, is that they just keep rolling over the lineup and just they constantly hit. There's no free outs in the lineup. When you have Ozzie Albies batting eighth and he's hitting like 285 now and he's getting hot, that's a fun team to watch, and it's a really hard team to pitch to. Whereas a team with Ender on it, you know, maybe you can go to some spots in the lineup and you'll get some free outs to kind of get yourself out of some situations. And that's tough because the contract is really good. He has a track record of production, particularly defensively, but again, some with the bat too. There are going to be teams that maybe need a guy like that, the Braves just don't need him right now. And if you can get some real value for him, then why not? You can talk to other contenders. You can be that's be a piece that you can sell. You don't have to necessarily do it for a piece. You know, the tweets I always get are, why don't we just trade him to the Giants? And, you know, they'll send us, you know, the relievers that we want. But I think that's almost thinking too small because, I mean, the Giants are probably wanting to, you know, get young assets and Ender's a lot of things, but he's not that.
Yeah.
What instead they would probably want to do is, you know, talk to a contender and see if they have some young pieces that they can help, maybe low minors guys that they could stock up the minor leagues with, rather than just going to like one of the seven sellers and be like, hey, we got Ender. You know, I'm sure they'll have those conversations, but you don't even have to think that way with Ender because he might just be a piece that you can sell off while also adding to your club. That's kind of where my general thought process is.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. For years now, as they've kind of figured out, and in the last maybe 2 years with Acuna coming up, you kind of wonder if, you know, and Acuna, of course, was a center fielder in the minors, and that's probably his best position moving forward. You know, the Mets are the team, to me, that are just so bad defensively. You think about New York and their need for a reliable center fielder. They kind of do piecework right now for center field defense. Now, you know, interdivision trades are kind of weird, and I have no idea what the Mets think of Ender, but you talk about teams that at least on paper make sense as trade partners, that they do. But again, as you, there's many, many layers to this, and not to go too deep into the which team is going to acquire Ender and Ciarte if he's going to get moved. You know, I think of all the teams that kind of make sense. You mentioned the Giants. I mean, I think the Mets almost make too much sense because they need that defense so badly. They're almost like the Phillies of a year ago where, you know, lineup is okay and the pitching is pretty solid, but the defense is just miserable. And I think that's a real problem for them and something they're seeing, that you can't just throw a bunch of hitters out there who can't catch the ball, because for every run you score, if you give a run right back defensively the next inning, you're where are you getting? So, I don't know what they do with Ender. If I had to put $100 on where Ender and CRT is on August 1, I think personally, I would say he's still in it with Atlanta. But you really wouldn't have to twist my arm too much to say, no, they're going to try to trade him over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's a really close call because again, this is, and Anthopoulos has talked about this at length. Most recently, he has a series of articles that are coming out in the AJC from Mark Bradley. You know, he values roster depth a lot. And I think that what we're seeing with the guys in Gwinnett, the Duvalls and guys like that, is that he basically looks at the 40-man roster as the major league roster, more or less. You just kind of, whenever you need a guy, you just kind of, you only have to bring him 30 minutes down the road and, you know, bring him in. And it's not a dumb thing to do. Now, in Ender's case, it's a little bit, you know, he's a veteran guy. You don't want to necessarily just like keep him in the minors. You don't want to have, you know, there's a relationship that you want to be able to preserve with him. But at the same time, I don't think even Ender could look at this current team and thinks that, you know, when he's on it, he makes it better. You know what I mean?
Who's he going to replace?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, again, the bench would make the most sense, but given the bullpen's struggles at times, and they've kind of had to really piece together a lot of these bullpen appearances, they've done so successfully, but they've been able to do it because they have like eight guys that they can, you know, throw in there and make it work. So you don't want to necessarily tax those guys that are already kind of playing with fire a little bit. So Scott, we are now at the All-Star break. This team is 54-37, which is pretty good. Six-game lead in the NL East. Both, and again, the Nationals are heating up. Phillies are hanging around. What's your level of optimism, just from the division perspective first? Kind of, what's your the Braves are pretty clear favorites to win the East, and nothing too much to worry about.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a six-game lead, which is a lead, but it's also not that big of a lead, especially when you have, I think, 9 games left with the Phillies, and I think they have 12 games left with the Nationals, which is a little bit of a concern. Maybe it's 9. It's either 3 or 4 series remaining. But yeah, I mean, I think as of today, I picked the Braves to win the East. I think very worst case scenario, they get a wild card spot. But yeah, I think they win the division for a second year in a row. It was a great, I think it was Dave O'Brien who tweeted out today that the Nationals are 21-9 over the last 30 days, which is tied with the Braves for the best record in baseball. So, the fact that the Nats have gone on this crazy run and they've done a good job. They're beating up on the Royals and the Tigers and the Marlins, teams that you should beat. The fact that they've gone 21-9 and they haven't made up a single game in the standings has to be a little deflating for them. So, I'm with you. I think personally, I've thought for a while now that the Nationals are the bigger threat than the Phillies. I don't know how you feel about that, but, with any time you have a rotation of Strasburg, Scherzer and Corbin, who are all having great years, I think their bullpen is slowly but surely getting better. And then they have a good but not great lineup, but certainly a passable lineup. I think they are more of a threat than the Phillies, who honestly, I think the Phillies are fortunate at this point in the year to be 4 games above 500. Their pitching staff has been really bad. The lineup is not nearly as good as what people thought. I think in baseball, they're like 18th in WRC plus as a team, which is pretty astounding when you consider the names they added last winter. So, I think the Phillies are going to be there at the end of the year, and obviously the Nationals will be too. But yeah. I think with the 6-game lead and as this team, really, it seems like every week the Braves get a little bit better. I was talking to somebody about that the other day, and it seems like every week this team is just a little bit better than the week before, whereas the Phillies seem to be doing the opposite, and I think the Nationals are a little bit more on the Braves' trajectory than Phillies. So, yeah, I don't see, unless there would just be a crazy run of injuries, I think the Braves win the division again. What about you?
I think so, too. I agree with you that the Nationals at this point are the real problems for in terms amongst those teams that are like going to be challenging for the Braves for the title. The Phillies just they have gotten better defensively, but there's still like times you just watch these games and you're like, what is going on with this fielding situation? You know, that it's not quite as bad as last year where it felt like they had 6 first basemen playing various positions around their house in their field, but it's still not great. You know, the thing about the Phillies is, you know, the guys that they acquired haven't really played that poorly. You know what I mean? Like, Harper hasn't been awesome, but he's been fine. Muto's been Real Muto. He's basically the same guy. And, you know, Segura's been playing well. It's just that the rest of the lineup's been very meh, and the pitching staff's been terrible. One more thing worth noting is that Nola pitched really well today, and he pitched really well against us this past week, which we're going to talk a little bit about. You know, shutting down this lineup the way he did is no small task. And he almost no hit he was carrying a no hitter at least through the 6th inning, I think, today against the Mets, which is, you know, a little bit less of a challenge, I would imagine. But the Nationals are interesting to me just because in terms of a matchup perspective, I don't feel like the Nationals are particularly well equipped to just take like 7 of 9 games or whatever from the Braves in head-to-head matchups because the Braves offense is so good. You're only going to get so much value from your starters against the Braves because some of these guys are going to get you. You know what I mean? You're not. It's going to be tough to get, you know, those 1 and 2 run games against the Braves. Whereas, you know, you might be able to suppress them a bit, but it feels like that matchup feels at best even when the Nationals are playing their game. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be tough for them, I think, to make up ground, especially when you have the Phillies too, who have a knack for kind of stealing games here and there too, because they're going to have lots of head-to-head matchups between those two teams. It feels like there's going to be enough beating up of each other in the division that it's going to be hard to overcome a 6-game lead for me. You know, I think the Nationals are definitely a better team than the Phillies, but I mean, the Phillies have guys like, you know, Harper and Rhys Hoskins who just out of nowhere can just make a game, you know, can steal games from you just because they have that kind of power and that kind of ability. But overall, you know, I see the Braves. I don't know if this is like – we're not going to see like the Braves running away with this division with like a 15-game lead or anything.
No.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening. The Nationals are good enough. The Phillies are good enough to kind of hang around a bit. But the Braves had that crazy run, and they had a really tough schedule in June. Whereas, you know, the Nationals did what they did against, you know, some less than good competition. We'll see if the Nationals can continue to beat high-level competition, whereas the Braves, I mean, there's some Royals matchups coming up. We'll get more of the Mets, maybe some more of the Marlins thrown in there. A little bit easier lineup. I say easy as though this game wasn't, you know, a real – this game today wasn't a taxing one. But, you know, overall, I like the Braves' chances again, I feel like this margin feels about right at the end of the year for me. Like, it just, that's kind of where I feel like it will end up. But, and which is kind of surprising because I thought the Nationals were going to be a little bit better, and I thought the Phillies were going to be significantly better than they are. I thought it was going to be a really close race.
Yeah. And, well, I picked the Nationals to win the division. I mean, I say that and everyone kind of gave me crap for it, but I truly think if this team plays to their potential, they're just as good as the Braves. Now, again, I don't want to sit here and give too much credit to the Nationals. There's a reason the Braves are six games ahead of them. The Braves are really good. They're finding ways to win games. And I think, too, because of all the talent that's already in the organization and the ability to go out and add a player or two over the next 4 weeks. As you know, as we said, I think the Braves do win the division, but the Nationals are our legitimate team. I think they're far more likely as of what is today, July 7th. I think they're far more likely to be there at the end of the year, really pushing the Braves than the Phillies will.
Well, yeah, and it's worth noting, too, on the flip side with the Nationals, if they don't get big seasons from Juan Soto and Anthony Rendon, that could be a problem for them in the second half because the offensively, if they don't have both those guys really cooking, that they become much less scary. You know, but you know, at the moment, those guys are among the better hitters in baseball, so that works out well for them, at least in terms of you know, keeping things interesting. I just wanted to ask this before we kind of go into our first ad break, which is, you know, we're doing this roundtable at Talking Chop, and you're going to be hearing, I think those will come out either Tuesday or Thursday or something like that. But we're doing who are your offensive MVPs and your least, you know, and the guys who are really surprising or disappointing. So I wanted to ask you kind of a little bit of a preview of that. Who's your MVP for the first half, and who's your LVP, least valuable player, for the first half?
You know, I picked already written my little blurb for it. Now, I think who's the MVP? I think Freddie Freeman is the obvious answer. Would you agree with that?
I actually have another name, and I actually put
it's
mine
funny.
On that.
So I do too. So I'm going to go, and maybe this is your guy, but I picked Mike Soroka.
See, it's a strong choice. Not the name I picked, but I mean, you're talking to the right guy to convince of this. So
not to, you know, not to overlook Freddie. Sure. The correct answer to this question is probably Freddie Freeman. I'm going to say Mike Soroka just because nothing from Freddie, but you think about the lineup 1 through 8, it's been incredibly good. Now, if you take him out of that lineup, don't get me wrong, the Braves are far less of a good team, far less of an impactful lineup without Freddie. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying with Soroka is can you imagine this rotation as bad as it's been without Soroka's first half?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
That's kind of where I went of the, if you had to remove one player from the team, or if you could only protect one player from the roster that wasn't getting removed, I think I'd pick Soroka just because, at least based on the first half, because of how good he was. You know, I think what did he end up? 10 of his 15 starts in the first half. He allowed one run or less in, you know, 66% of his starts. That's incredible for a 21-year-old. Of course, he was named to the All-Star team. Works deep into games, which is not something that a lot of the Braves starters have done this year. You think about the struggles of Mike Voltanevich and Kevin Gausman. You know, you never really know which Julio Teheran is going to show up. Max Fried has been a little bit of a roller coaster this year. So, I think Freddie is probably the obvious answer for MVP, but for today's purposes, I'll say that Mike Soroka is the MVP of the team just because he has shined in an area where there's been not nearly as many bright spots as what the lineup has been.
I agree that it is. I would not fault anyone for saying Freddie Freeman. I mean, the guy has a 149 WRC plus coming into today's game in the first half, which is legitimately crazy.
Yeah.
Has already matched his home run total from last year at 23 home runs and, you know, 68 RBIs. The guy does everything well. He's one of the best hitters in baseball. If it wasn't for Bellinger and Yelich having the years that they're having, Freddie would be getting more MVP league wide. conversation, you know, and with Yelich's back injury and, you know, Bellinger's history of all of a sudden turning into a tomato, you know, or a pumpkin rather, whatever fruit you want, vegetable you want to use, you know, it's possible that he could be in the running for that again. And I would have no problems with anyone picking that. I actually picked Ronald Acuna Jr. for a couple reasons. And again, you're talking to the right guy to try to convince of Mike Soroka because my love for him has been well documented for the past several years. But, the issue I have is that what Ronnie does on a day-to-day basis keeps innings going, and it shows his overall production on the base paths, you know, obviously the power production, what he's just been able to do as an all-around player. He leads this team in WAR. It's not Freddie. Now, there's some of that has to do, at least in terms of Fangraphs WAR. I actually haven't looked at Baseball Reference, but and part of that's because it's a positional adjustment that he's playing center field more, and Freddie's playing first base and doesn't get as much love as he should for the lead defense he plays over at first base. But even when Ronnie has a bad game, he'll always, like, at least draw a walk in a game or, you know, break up a ground, a double play where, you know, he beats the throw to first because he's just so fast. And every time he's on base, he just causes havoc. You know, it's not always like the big time home runs and, you know, the big highlight reel stuffs, but he's always taking extra bases on ground balls. He's always like scoring from first, scoring from second on balls he probably shouldn't be able to score from in those scenarios. He does so many things well, and it was a stark difference when you put him in leadoff, giving him the most at bats on the team. And all of a sudden, the team starts really singing. Now, there's a lot of reasons why that started going better, you know, kind of putting guys in better positions all throughout the lineup.
Sure.
But having him there, it just feels like he's kind of the catalyst that kind of gets the offense moving, even when it's not revolving around him. There are games where he just wins by himself because he's so talented. But there's also games where he kind of kept things going just because of the kind of player he is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that the good news for the Braves, and it makes it fun for guys like you and I who write about this team and do podcasts, is there's numerous legitimate MVP candidates that we can discuss. It's not, oh yeah, it's obviously this guy, or oh yeah, it's not this guy. And I think it speaks to the depth of this roster that after, you know, 60% of the season, that they have the lead that they have in the division, and they have a pretty comfortable, one thing we haven't talked about is we hit the break. I mean, they are pretty comfortably the second best record in the National League right now, which is big. I don't think they're going to catch the Dodgers, who are like 6 or 7 ahead, and LA just, I mean, you look at their team, you talk about the Braves having a good roster. The Dodgers are just ridiculous this year. And their division is pretty average. But yeah, I mean, I think that the fact that we're talking and having this conversation, and then the Braves are on their way towards, assuming they hold on, that they would have home field advantage in the first round. And not only that, but avoid the Dodgers for seemingly the first time in forever in that first round, is really something to keep an eye on, because this team, you always want home field advantage in the playoffs. Even if during the year you're better on the road, I think you just naturally feel more comfortable at home, especially with a younger team like this one. So it's something to keep an eye on, to be sure.
Yeah, and I actually wonder how much work the Braves are doing on the Cubs right now in terms of, like, really analyzing and breaking down all their stuff throughout the next couple months, because, again, they feel pretty comfortably in that second spot. If you believe that the Cubs are kind of comfortable favorites in the NL Central, which, you know, is a little bit iffy when you have the Brewers that seemingly always hang around and do something in the second half.
Yeah,
but
that's a weird division.
When the Pirates are the worst team in that division, and they're pretty good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So the difference between first and last is 4.5 games right now.
And that's wild. That's wild to me. I mean, I understand it's only the All-Star break, but again, anyone can make a run in that division, but you've played against that division well as the Braves, and having home field advantage against those division foes that you've played pretty well against, that would be a big thing, just to be able to, you know, have a chance at a deep playoff run, because again, once you get into the playoffs, anything can happen, but The later you can play the Dodgers and maybe have something bad happen to them along the way, the better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, you start thinking about scenarios. As good as the Dodgers are, if they have to play a short series against, say, the Nationals or in the wild card, well, yeah, as good as the Dodgers are, they're going to see Scherzer twice and then probably two of Strasburg and Corbin in a short series. I mean, who wants to face that in a short series? Not saying that it's going to happen. There's still a long way to go. I don't want people to be confused here, but, as you said, if you can at least give yourself the opportunity to not see the Dodgers, who have just been the team's kryptonite for 6 or 7 years now, it seems like, it's certainly a good thing.
For sure. Before we go on to the part where we kind of talk about the last week of games, we're going to take a short break for a bit of an ad.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, guys, and now we're back, and we're going to talk a little bit about specifically the games from the last week or so. Some of this is going to be a little bit more of like in the last 10 or 11 games type stretch, but we're going to talk a bit about some of the games that we've seen this past week in more specific detail. The Braves are 7-4 in their past 11 games now with the win today, and it goes without saying the offense has been pretty insane. A couple notable iffy games from the offense, but overall, out of nowhere, they just score 5 or 6 runs, and that's just kind of the reality of what it is to be a Braves fan right now, is that all of a sudden they just score 6 runs and then win the game. Before Sunday's game, the past week, they've outscored opponents 26-15, and again, 4-3 win today. You can kind of do the math from there, outscoring 30-18 over the past week or so. Really, really good. The two losses that they had this week were to Aaron Nola, who looked insane in that game. And again, to shut down this offense the way he did, he looked like prime Aaron Nola from last year, which not something you necessarily want to see. But it seems like he's also doing it to other division guys too. And the other one was Max Fried did not look good, man. He didn't look good in that start at all. He was playing with fire throughout the whole time. I was actually a little bit surprised that they didn't score more runs off of him.
Yeah, I mean, they gave up 15 hits yesterday, and for the Braves to lose 5-4 in a game they gave up 15 hits is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and a lot of that was off of Fried, and he just never looked comfortable. Not sure if it was a heat thing or maybe he was just getting a bit tired and in need of a break, which is, again, it's a good time to be kind of feeling that way because you get one for the next, week or so. Another game of note, the Braves ended up winning this game comfortably, by just kind of running roughshod and just catching up very quickly. But Mike Soroka had the rare bad inning where he gave up 4 runs. Did you see where he was like pacing in the dugout? I'm like, you should have scored more. You should have killed him when you had the chance because he's not going to give up anymore. And they didn't. It speaks to kind of what you were talking about. He gave up 4 runs in that game and people were tweeting like, here comes the regression. I knew it was coming eventually. He couldn't stay this good forever. If that's his bad start, yeah, you take that 10 times out of 10. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and to his credit, too, Tukey was warming up in the bullpen during the first inning because he was already up to 30 pitches and it was a hot night. Like you said, you don't want a young pitcher going out there and blowing an arm out, throwing 40, however many pitches in the first inning. So, good for Mike. As you said, it's pretty rare. It was by far his worst start of the season. And even then, he had the bad first inning. And then he threw another, I think he went 4 2/3 and then yep. He hit 100 pitches. And obviously when you throw 35 in the first inning, it's going to be tough to work too deep into the game. But to his credit, after the first inning, I think he only gave up something like 2 or 3 hits and a walk, which speaks a lot to his mental fortitude. I think the thing with Mike that is so impressive at age 21 is, you don't know if he's down 4-0 or if he's up 4-0 or if it's, game one of the World Series or if it's the third game of the year. You just don't know because he's so calm, cool, and collected out there. So that was really encouraging. And like you said, the Braves lineup just pounded Zach Eflin that night and the Phillies pitching staff for 12 runs. So it was nice to see the offense pick Mike up when he's been, especially early on in the year when the offense wasn't quite as good. He single-handedly would win them a game with his pitching. It was nice to see the offense pick him up and get a win and win the series against the Phillies to close out the series.
Yeah, it's actually been nice this year. You and I have been covering this team together for a while now. Every year it felt like there was one pitcher on the staff that was not getting any run support whatsoever. Like Julio has definitely been a victim of this. Shelby Miller was famously a victim of this. That hasn't been a problem this year. Every once in a while there'll be like a little bit of an off off game, but it doesn't ever feel like the offense isn't ever going to be, they take that guy's game off for whatever reason. You know what I mean? Like, you know, they're not going to have to win a 2-1 game most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time they're going to put up some runs. And if you have your guy out there and he's pitching well, he's going to get the win. Yeah. Keuchel was excellent today. Excellent. His first start, he really wasn't that bad. His last start, he wasn't bad either. It's nice to kind of see. This felt like vintage Keuchel, you know, kind of a junk baller, you know, throws that 87 mile an hour cutter, 89 mile an hour fastball, you know, throws the changeup.
Changeup off plate. Yeah.
And that's the formula. It's just like, you know, like you get two cutters, you get a changeup, and then the fourth pitch is usually when you make your out, because it's going to be a ground ball straight to somebody. And again, looked really good. If he is vintage Keuchel and just can do that, you know, eat up a bunch of innings, be super efficient, like this, he could be a really big pickup for a rotation that really needs picking up.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about the way that he makes two rehab starts, one in low A and one in double A, and then he comes up and faces a red hot Nationals team, which has been tied with the Braves for the best record in baseball over the last month. But he comes up and pitches in Washington and then in Chicago against the Cubs, which is a great lineup against left-handed pitching, and then comes home. And like you said, Aaron Nola was just a little bit better than he was on Monday night, but it was a 2-0 game. And there was only one inning where Keuchel was really in trouble. And it was when I think it was Jay Bruce kind of poked one down the line and scored the game's only runs. You know, for him to finally kind of get a little bit of a break against the Marlins was nice today. And, the two runs that scored, of course, were on a Chad Sabatka fastball that just didn't get inside enough to make it 4-3 in the eighth. You know, but he was really good. As you said, it was vintage Keuchel. I think he recorded 22 outs and 18 of them were either ground balls or strikeouts. That's when you know
that's a good place to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's when you know that it's kind of the guy who was so valuable for the Astros. And again, you know, Chip Carey always brings it up, and as much crap as we give him, you know, and in the time when everyone's trying to hit 100 and just, strike everybody out, it is kind of a little bit of a refreshing breath of air when, you know, he goes out there and throws, as you said, three or four pitches to everybody and they end up just tapping out to the shortstop or third baseman. So, he was really good. His ERA is at 3.6, even after the two runs scored that once he left the game. And I think that as he continues to settle in and get into a rhythm, he's only going to get better.
I agree. It's actually kind of funny. This Braves pitching staff has a couple unicorns, at least in terms of how the game is played right now, because throughout baseball, and I mean, if this even goes down to AAA, pitchers just give up home runs. So it's a power pitching game. And, you know, it's just kind of, you know, giving up the occasional solo shot is just the price you pay for being able to get big strikeout totals. And they have Dallas Keuchel, who is like ground ball specialist, doesn't throw the ball above 90. And then Mike Soroka, who is throwing sinkers half the time in an era where people just don't throw sinkers anymore because the hitters got so good at hitting the ball low in the zone. And is, again, he has really good stuff, but he's not throwing 99 out there. He's, you know, low to mid 90s and doesn't give up home runs. Just doesn't give them up. He's like, you know, I think he's given up like 0.4 home runs per nine innings he's pitched or something like that, which in this day and age, I'm pretty sure he leads the league in it right now. And really incredible. He didn't give up home runs in the minor leagues either, so it's not like a weird statistical thing. It's just a guy that doesn't give up home runs. And if you have a guy like that in an era where people are trying to hit a lot of them, that's generally a good place to be. All right, Scott, so we're entering the quote-unquote dark period of time of the summer. We're actually not going to have Braves games for about a week. And the All-Star break is upon us, but we do get to see some guys play that are of interest to both of us, I think. First, we have tonight, the Futures game, Ian Anderson and Christian Pache. Pache is going to be leading off for the National League team, and Ian Anderson is going to be playing on pitching in the game as well. Are you going to watch the game?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. It'll be great, and especially when, you know, it's a little bit of a bummer when guys aren't starting, and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to watch and you know, just kind of wait for the Braves guys to get in there. But, yeah, especially with Anderson starting, he's somebody who I haven't seen a whole bunch of just because he's been at the lower levels of the minors, obviously. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, considering that, I mean, he had like a one inning tune up that like they pulled him so that he could like rest for this, his Futures game appearance. But before that, his previous start was playing part of a no hitter where he struck out like 14 guys.
Yeah.
He said he looked really dialed in. You know, it's a fastball. It's like a legitimate 96, 97, maybe a little bit higher even at times. And, you know, still throws a good breaking ball. Change ups been getting better and better. It's all about command with him. And that's been getting, I mean, it started off kind of atrocious. That whole Mississippi rotation was like walking five guys a game, which was bizarre to watch for a while, but he's gotten better and better. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing him against the best of the best, because he's the kind of guy that has the kind of stuff that's going to get some really ugly swings. And some of these guys who are going up there hacking is like their first time on national TV. I think it could be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, especially when he can let it fly, since he's not throwing, you know, 100 pitches today.
Well, yeah. And I'm pretty sure that the first at bat of the game, I can't remember who's home and away, but the first at bat person he's going to go against is Wander Franco, who's the number one prospect in baseball.
Yeah. He's going to be like a superstar. I mean, like a legitimate superstar.
Yeah, he's basically Acuna, what he was. And except that people have been on Acuna a little bit, have been on Franco longer than they were on Acuna. He's, I mean, a top five tool talent, incredible baseball player. You know, really, really fun to watch. I'm interested to see how that goes. Then we have the All-Star game where we have my Canadian son, Mike Soroka. Then we have Freddie Freeman and Ronald Acuna in the All-Star game. Do you put much into kind of like performance in the game? You want to see those guys like performing well against the best of the best, or is this kind of just more of a kind of a fun distraction and, you know, you just kind of hope they just don't get hurt?
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, if I had my choice, I'd rather see Braves there than, you know, like the one token Brave, like Shelby Miller that one year when the Braves were so terrible and had the worst record in baseball and Shelby was like the only guy they sent. Yeah, it'd be fun to see Freddie and I mean, it's, you know, the dark times, right? but yeah, it's, you know, it'd be great to see Freddie and Acuna, since they're starting. They'll probably both get two starts. I think Acuna is leading off, I believe is what, Dave Roberts said, and he'll be in left field. And the National League lineup is just absurd. I know Christian Yelich, is kind of in limbo now because of a back injury, but, I mean, you look at the National League lineup and it's just absurd. I mean, with Freddie and Acuna and Bellinger and Josh Bell and Charlie Blackmon, who's having a great year. I mean, 1 through 9, that's just a stupid lineup. So, it'll be fun.
Yeah, Blackmon might hit 8th or something in that lineup, which is like legitimately insane. You know what I mean?
I would have 1,000 OPS, even in cores. I mean, if everybody could have 1,000 OPS, and you know, they would do it in cores. It's just not that easy. So yeah, it's pretty absurd.
Yeah, AL roster is also really good. Basically, any chance that I get to see Mike Trout, where I just don't get to watch him that often, you know, him being on the West Coast, you're closer to that watching him than I am. But I mean, it's watching one of the best to ever play the game. I think it's going to go down that way. I don't know how long his career lasts, just because you never really know that sort of stuff, how a guy's body will, you know, respond to but, you know, it is very, even with the years that Bellinger and Yelich, even like guys like Acuna and, you know, Freddie, and there's a bunch of guys who are really good right now that are a lot of fun to watch. Then you watch Trout and you realize he's in a class by himself. He will be in a class by himself for a long time. You know, just does everything well, just everything. And while I have, you know, kind of issues with, like, you know, because there's a fan vote, whether or not like All-Star game appearances should be like in players' contracts as an incentive, because they don't really have a control over a lot of that stuff. Even if they play well, there's guys who play well that didn't make the All-Star game this year. There are Braves and there are non-Braves who did not get in that very likely could have in, you know, if it was just based solely on merit. But getting to watch these guys play against each other at the same time and kind of seeing the best of the best go against each other and getting to see guys that I don't get to see very often, it's always a treat for me. So while, again, I don't like put a ton of stock in, like, you know, this guy's an 11-time All-Star. It kind of tells me that he was a popular guy who probably played pretty well, but it doesn't tell me anything beyond that. But I also enjoy these games because it does kind of bring me back to like those mid-90s games where, like, you know, those All-Star games where, like, you were seeing like 11 Hall of Famers guaranteed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. It's a good time. Monday night is the Home Run Derby too, which I love that they now give $1 million to whoever wins.
I love the new format too. It's been good.
Yeah, and with the juiced ball, I mean, you think about some of the guys in it who are going to crush. Again, it kind of sucks that Yelich isn't going to be in it, but I mean, the way the ball is flying, there was a whole range of guys who could have done it. But yeah, that's fun on Monday night. And you mentioned the futures game tonight. So I think, you know, it's a fun, even though there's no Braves games until Friday night in San Diego, it's a fun couple days. And again, a chance to just kind of sit back and enjoy what the Braves did in the first half and then gear up for what should be a really fun final 2.5 months.
Before we move on to kind of the trade deadline stuff, who's your pick in the home run derby? Blind
ooh,
pick.
Ooh.
It's a tough call. It's tough.
I think if you go on like MLB.com and pick the winner and like how many total home runs he hits, you win like $250,000. And in that, I picked Pete Alonso. So I'll go with Pete, as much as it would be unfun to see a Mets player win, I'll take Pete Alonso beats like Jock Peterson, I think, is somebody who could just let it fly. So I'll say Pete Alonso over Jock. What about you?
Those are both really good picks. I picked Alonso too. That guy accidentally hits home runs. It feels,
yeah.
His rookie year this year feels like Judge's. You know what I mean? Just like,
yeah,
except he's not playing in Yankee Stadium. You know what I mean? Like, he's just flicking balls out of everywhere.
Yeah.
It's like he's like, you know, there's no such thing as a routine fly ball with that guy. And you know, he doesn't have, more importantly, he doesn't have to change anything about his swing or his approach,
yeah,
to be geared to be great in that format.
He's kind of like Evan Gattis. Like, remember, like, Gattis, I mean, not to compare the two guys, because Alonso has a little bit of a better long-term outlook, but I mean, you just remember seeing Gattis and just the bat look so small when he was holding it, because he's such a big, powerful dude. You know, you just see Alonso swing, and like you said, he hits a fly ball, and then all of a sudden it's 8 rows deep into left field. And you go, holy smokes, this guy's crazy power. So yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Acuna make a run, but Acuna can hit some tape measure shots, but I don't know if he's necessarily the guy that's going to hit a ton of them to where, like, he'll beat a guy that, like, you know, is kind of built to, you know, hit, put up 15 plus home runs. You know what I mean? It'll be a perfectly respectable showing. Depends on who he's matched up against. Is he matched up against Vladdy Jr.? Because that's kind of a tough matchup too.
Josh Bell, which is not much easier.
No, it's not much easier, but again, you know, it's not really a stage that Josh has, you know, a ton of experience on too. So maybe Acuna gets out of the first round, but ultimately, I mean, there's no easy outs in the home run derby. Let's just be honest about it. But I think Alonso is probably a very good pick, but there's a lot of guys who could just go wild. And I really hope it's one of those memorable ones. Cause I mean, like, there's been some home run derbies recently where you've just seen guys put on real shows. I hope it's not one of those situations where all of a sudden those guys forget how to hit for the second half after they do it. But
yeah, let's hope not. That'd be really bad.
Yeah, we've seen Josh Hamilton says hi. He put on that show in the All Star game in the home run derby, and you know, I don't think he hit again.
No.
All right. So this is running a little bit long, so we'll go ahead and just talk about the trade deadline. It's coming up. We're a month, less than a month away now, and I know you're probably getting the questions about the deadline as much as I am. It's kind of who the Braves are going to get, who's available, which prospects could probably get traded away. I know you had some thoughts that you got down on paper, so I'm going to let you share those, and I'm going to share mine at the end there.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're still a little ways away. I think realistically teams use these next 4 or 5 days to really evaluate. I think at this point there's 7 obvious sellers: Baltimore, Detroit, Kansas City, Seattle, and Toronto in the American League. And then Miami and San Francisco in the National. But then if you do the math and you say, okay, let's say there's 7 teams who are for sure selling, and then a couple others over the next few weeks will fall off and start to sell, then you realize you have about 10 teams that are selling, and you have, in theory, close to 20 who could be buying. I think there's just such a big middle class in baseball this year. There's only a couple of super teams, and then everybody else is right in the middle. Again, we talked about the NL Central. I mean, the Reds are 4 games back of first place as we hit the break, but they're also in last place. So there's a wide range of people. I think the most common names that are coming up, and there is a good list that I found if you're interested, because obviously Eric and I aren't going to be able to go over all 50 names of players who could be traded over the next month. But
as much as we threaten Brad, we're not actually going to do that.
Yeah, we'll be here another 2 hours. I mean, the obvious names – as far as like the rental starters, guys who are going to be free agents here in 2 months, is Madison Bumgarner and Zach Wheeler. I'm not entirely sure the Mets with a new front office, they're necessarily going to sell after making all their moves to win, but I think Zach Wheeler is a guy who needs a change of scenery. Maybe not quite to the level of like Justin Verlander getting out of Detroit to Houston a few years ago, but he has the stuff. I think he's just in a bad environment right now. And then Bumgarner, whether you love the guy or you aren't as enamored with him, I think his postseason experience does speak for itself, but this is not the same guy in 2012 who, you know, had like the 0.087 ERA over four starts. On the way to the World Series. So, those guys.
Despite what some fans seem to think, that if the Braves signed or got Mad Bum, like, they're instant, like, World Series favorites, it's not the same guy. I get questions about him all the time.
Yeah, me too. And that's not to say he wouldn't help the Braves. I mean, you know, people say, oh, well, he has a 4 ERA. Well, he's a little more consistent than some of the other options. And I think he's somebody you would at least trust in with a playoff start. But he, as you said, he's not a guy who you add him and all of a sudden, you know, you're not adding Max Scherzer, right? Where you're like, oh my God, you talk about guys who can single-handedly win you a short playoff series. I'm just not sure that Bumgarner's at that level. Maybe whoever gets him, he does morph into his superhuman, power in the playoffs and throws two shutouts and advances the team by himself to the NLCS. But somebody who will be certainly talked about a bunch. Moving on, and there are a few other rental starters out there, guys who are going to be free agents, but those are probably the two main ones. Then you get into the guys who are signed for another year and a half, the Marcus Stroman types, who I'm a fan of. It sounds like there might be some bad blood there with Anthopoulos in Toronto. I don't know if there's more to that or not. Mike Minor, old friend Mike Minor, who was always
That would be wild if that happened.
Full circle. Yeah, he was always a talking chop favorite, and always thought it was a little weird how the Braves just kind of kicked him to the curb. And I know he had the injuries and the shoulder problems, but Minor, for those who don't know, is having a phenomenal season with the Rangers and the guy who signed for a year and a half. So if you are going to give up a prospect, I'm of the belief that if you are going to give up a legitimate prospect, you're going to want a guy who you're going to have for more than 2 months plus the playoffs.
I agree.
And then finally, you know, there's a million names out there. Matthew Boyd of the Tigers is somebody who signed for another 3.5 years. Somebody who's having a bit of a breakout season, is a little bit on the younger end. But with the Tigers being at least a couple years away from contending, there's been talk that, he could be moved. And, I think the Braves had a scout at the Tigers games this past weekend. And I think Boyd struck out, 12 batters on Friday or whatever day it was. So, naturally those are names. And then of course the relievers. We've talked many times. There's a million relievers out there. Will Smith is a Georgia guy. Will Smith, the Giants reliever, a guy who is a legitimate closer, a left-handed option, guy who could be a real weapon in the playoffs. And then going on, basically, if you want to know which relievers could be of interest, just look at the bad teams, those 7 or 8 teams that we just listed.
Pretty much it, yep.
And look at their closer, their 8th-inning guy, and say, okay, these guys are more than likely available unless they're super young and controlled for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I think you've nailed the big names. You know, there's going to be a lot of minor names that are going to be floating around, and I'm curious to what teams like Texas and the Royals are going to do, you know, because what pieces they choose to sell off, I mean, the Royals are far away, but I don't think anything that the Royals have done in terms of how they've gone about their rebuild and kind of going into, you know, their struggles has made any sense to me. It was like the writing was on the wall 3 years ago. And they probably should have made moves, and they didn't. And it's the same regime that's in place. So what are they going to do with some of their young guys? And, you know, same thing with Texas, where, I mean, they're 5 games above 500 right now, but they're also 9 games back in an AL West, which is kind of a nightmare for any team. You know, basically it's Seattle, who I'm pretty sure would trade anyone that's not nailed down. But, you know, for the price on some of the guys that you'd want, maybe like Mitch Haniger or, you know, the other guys, you might be a little bit prohibitive. The guys that everyone talks about that they just, you know, they just look at their a bad team and they go, well, we want your ace or anything like that. I mean, if there's a bunch of years of control, they're probably just not going to move that guy.
No.
And it's just not going to happen. You know, like, yes, Toronto is not having a good year. They're not going to trade Vladdy Jr. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, they just kind of start eyeing those teams' top prospects or young guys. And that's a tough sell. So what you're going to probably see from the Braves, particularly since they've already added Dallas Keuchel this year, which, you know, between that and what you would hope to get from your, you know, your starting pitching prospects who have been kind of hit and miss this year, is that I don't see a big move for a starting pitcher as super likely, particularly with what, you know, with in Mad Bum's case, he has this no trade clause where he basically targeted every contender out there and put their names on it, so that way he can like, you know, try he can like negotiate extensions that way.
Yeah, it's pretty smart actually on his part.
Yeah, it took me a long time to come around on it, but you know, if he seems like if he's perfectly content with like, hey, you know what, if I need to stay in San Francisco and you know either get a qualifying offer or then move on and you know negotiate my deal myself, that's fine. But if you want to move me, you know I'm going to go where I want to go. It was actually a pretty smart thing. I am skeptical that the Mets would be making any deals. And I understand that there's some pieces that make sense to like going to and from there, but there just seems to be, and I don't know what. This isn't unique to the NL East, right? But like the Marlins and the Mets have been historically very hesitant to try to make the Braves better. I'm not really sure what that meant. What that means for what the Marlins did. I mean, the Phillies really paid a premium to get Real Muto, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was like the only way to make that deal work is to pay a real premium. And I don't know if necessarily Zach Wheeler, with his injury history and his up and down, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like his up and down career, especially with injuries and just kind of not really knowing what version of him you're going to get. I think it would be wild if they got Mike Minor, though. I actually hadn't considered that because, I mean, the Rangers have been performing pretty well, but again, in that division and kind of where they are as a team, I'd be pretty surprised if they weren't. They
didn't and the Rangers are a pretty smart. I mean, you talk about front offices being smart and realizing there's more than just the day ahead of them. I think the Rangers have a really smart and forward-thinking front office, whereas the Mets just seem like they're a total mess. And, I mean, there was – granted, it's the New York media, but like a reporter for SNY was reporting the Mets were scouting, I think it was the Tigers relievers because they want to add them to their bullpen. And it's like, Mets, maybe. I mean, again, it's only the first week of July. Nobody's really out of it with the exception of a handful of teams. But I mean, if the Mets internally really think they're going to overcome three good teams, one really good team with the Braves and they're, you know, 12 games back or whatever they are, I guess the Mets could surprise us as they tend to do, but I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be the surprise to end all surprises that all of a sudden the Mets go on a tear and go wild, but I don't think that's going to happen. Especially since there seems to be so much discord being like, you know, Callaway, their manager is like, you know, like threatening media members. And then he's getting in a fight. He's getting in a fight with their GM recently.
Well, and there was a report. Yeah. That the GM, Brody Van Wagenen was like screaming at the coaches after the loss on Saturday night or something like that. I mean, it's just a dumpster fire right now.
Yeah, I was a little bit optimistic because it seemed like they made some pretty smart moves this offseason.
Some of them,
they certainly got the right guys. I don't think taking on Robinson Cano, or at least the corpse of him, and his, you know, the rest of his contract was necessarily the best idea. But, you know, they made some smart signings, and it felt like that they could have had a chance at something, but as it turns out, you know, the Mets are going to Mets. That's just what they're going to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, apparently once you get into that Mets, that building in the, at, you know, Mets HQ, you know, there's some sort of curse that gets put down on you and things go wild. Yeah. Anything else you want to share before we let everyone go?
No, I think I'm good. I'll be on recap duties, when the team is in San Diego, cause those games don't start until like 10 o'clock. Or at least the Friday night game isn't until 10 Eastern. I think the Saturday night game is 8 Eastern, which isn't as bad for you East Coasters. But, yeah, I mean, it was a fun first half. It flew by. I don't know about you, but it felt like the first half just flew by. I mean, it seems like just yesterday we were here previewing the lineup and the rotation and all that with Brad. So, a fun first half. And as you mentioned earlier, we'll have the roundtable questions, on the site this week. And of course, any recaps of the home run derby, if, you know, if Acuna does well in the All-Star game and all that good stuff. And then when do, maybe I'm teasing ahead too much, but when does the top 30 come out for you guys?
I am glad you asked, Mr. Coleman. it actually starts rolling out tomorrow. We put out the honorable mentions list today. If Matt Powers has had his way, we would have had to rework all the rankings because Backstrom signed, but I refuse to do that. So you will not see Mekhi Backstrom's name on our list, but we are going to mention him kind of at the top, just kind of say generally where we probably think you probably would have ended up, just so people don't ask us 100 times. They probably still will. So it's going to be rolling out 6 players a day for the next 5 days, going through Friday, where we do the top 6. A lot of players have graduated. A lot of guys who I've been writing about for a long time are no longer eligible, which is really weird for me.
It's like seeing your kids grow up.
It's so bizarre, man. We were, when I was covering the Braves game and I was at SunTrust on the field, I was just talking to some of the media guys, and all of a sudden I saw Soroka and he saw me. He kind of jogged over and he's like, "It's good to see you up here." And I'm like, Yeah, it's weird for me. I'm not going to lie, because I was covering his games in Rome. You know what I mean? It's bizarre. It's kind of a bizarre place for me to be in right now. I'm seeing a lot of these guys who I've been covering forever. And, you know, it's a little bit different when you're seeing them in low A Rome's field versus, you know, the lights and SunTrust. So, but it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much, Scott. Really appreciate you taking the time to be on this with me and kind of help me get through this journey of hosting this particular podcast. I'm used to, you know, talking about minor league stuff. So it's kind of nice to kind of do things a little bit differently and, you know, talk about the Major League Club a little bit, because most of the time I'm kind of doing mostly minor league stuff. So make sure you check out the site this week for the prospect list. There's going to be some other original content stuff coming out, including those roundtables we were talking about. And I'm sure the guys are going to be coming up with stuff. Well, we don't do well when there's not baseball happening, and you'll probably see some articles popping up on a variety of topics just because we want to talk about baseball, because that's what we love doing. Make sure you subscribe to Talking Chop on iTunes or whatever podcast purveyor you choose to use. And make sure you leave a 5-star review, because not only do you get this podcast where normally you get to hear about Brad Rowland and his, you know, trade proposals for, you know, getting rid of Ozzie Albies and me and Scott desperately trying to doing that but you also get the Road to Atlanta podcast, which is the one I do regularly host, which comes out most of the time on Thursdays, where we talk about the minor league system and we get some really fun guests. I'm sure there's going to be some guests coming up on this podcast as well. So when you're subscribing to a podcast feed and you get both those podcasts, it feels like a no-brainer to me. We hope that you continue to enjoy listening to us and the response to the podcast. I mean, Scott, you've been doing these for a while too. Like, how this podcast has grown and like what it's turned into has been really fun, and I'm sure you've enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, it's great. And again, you know, I want to thank everybody who listens, because if nobody was listening, we probably wouldn't do these twice a week. So, you know, do thank everybody for listening and appreciate it. So, yeah, it's always a lot of fun to talk about the Braves.
Yeah, I will end by saying, kind of following up on what Scott was saying, this first half has been incredibly fun. Last year was fun, but it was almost like I was very apprehensive because –
Yeah, me
you know,
too.
You just, is this real? You don't really, you're kind of waiting for it to stop, and then it just didn't. This year, I mean, the team's just been going wild, and it feels real, and it feels like the team isn't just a little bit better than their competition, that in a lot of cases is significantly better, and that's just a joy to watch these young guys who we've been kind of following in various ways to kind of come into their own and really kind of show that they're one of the classes in baseball, period. You know, it might not culminate with a World Series win, but you know, it's a non-zero consideration right now, and it's been a joy to watch. So thanks again to all you guys. Brad will be back next week. I'm reasonably certain. At least he hasn't told me that I'm going to be posting again next week. And we'll see you guys next time.